Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to another edition of Inside the Football Business with Neil Stratton and Justin Van Fulpen, where we go inside the game of football and talk about the business aspect of what's going on outside the line. So today, obviously, we're in the kind of the month of December where signings, all-star games, we talk about trainers, different people as far as, you know, in the business kind of, ramp up as we, you know, the regular season has wound down. Now we're into the playoffs in Division I and 1AA, as well as, you know, the bowl seasons now have been set, and now really we're in a kind of a, for Division I, the guys that are in bowl games kind of, hey, figuring out where they're, who they're going to sign with, if they're done, you know, guys are signing. We're seeing that every day, whether it's on Twitter, Facebook, you know, Instagram, in regards to announcing what agent the player had signed with. So today we kind of wanted to first kind of start with news and notes, and then we wanted to talk about the trainers. Obviously, that's a big aspect of the business. So, Neil, how's it going this morning?
It's going well. Great to be here, Justin. It's a wild and also kind of wonderful time to be in the game. And if you're not affiliated with an NFL team, if you're an agent, if you're a player, anything along those lines, all-star game organizer, this may be the busiest month of the year for you, December and perhaps January. It all kind of happens behind the scenes. I mean, the focus is still on the field, but as you well know, Justin, this is a pretty crazy time.
Yeah, and obviously with your business and kind of tracking and knowing about the ins and outs of who's signing and anything like that, obviously it's a busy time of year. So anything, you know, you want to bring to our listeners, before we get kind of into the meat of the show in regards to talk about trainers?
Well, you know, right now I think for people who are listening to the show, I think there's an appeal to who's signing and where they're signing and all those kind of things. Right now we've got about 33 players signed. Obviously there's the easy ones like the Miles Jack, who's been out for quite a while, and perhaps Pharaoh Cooper, who's gone with CAA and hasn't been publicized quite as much. But we're starting to see more and more juniors come out. You know, we're hearing about the Nelson Spruces of the world, the Colorado wide receiver, who's pretty highly regarded, who's got it narrowed down but hasn't chosen anyone yet. There are a number of other players like Noah Spence, a defensive end, head to the Senior Bowl, who's with Relativity Sports, one of the bigger agencies out there. So it's starting to happen, and the wheels are definitely turning, and it's getting to be a pretty busy time, and players are making decisions that will have lasting implications. So we're right on top of it, and I know you are too, Justin.
Yeah, and one thing I actually was thinking about, I want to ask you a question on, is regarding you just mentioned, you know, narrowed down. Do you see, you know, for as how are the guys, normal people's, you know, and guys that, you know, are kind of outside the business, in regards to players narrowing down their agent selection, do they just do that something in the summer, you know, that you see most part as far as tracking, or is it now? And do some guys, some agents, can they come late to the game, like right now, and go and steal a guy, or not necessarily steal a guy, but sign a guy that they haven't been recruiting, you know, all year? Kind of what do you see, and what's kind of the trend that we've seen over the years?
Well, I think what you see a lot, you mentioned the summer. The summer has kind of become the time for agent days when schools have their scheduled events where agents are allowed to come in and speak to the players. And there's kind of a compact between the school and the agent in that situation. And they ask the agent to come in and speak to the player and not speak to them again until after the season. That's kind of a lot to ask. And some agents will do that, but what you see, I think, most often is the agents that follow that rule are A, the ones that are completely unestablished and want to do anything they can to stay on good terms with the schools, hoping that will pay dividends for them down the line. And the big, very biggest firms, which can afford to wait until after the season because they've got such an extensive client list and they've got so many contacts in the league, and they've got such a war chest for training purposes that they can afford to develop a relationship rather quickly, in the space of a month. And as you named it, kind of maybe steal a player who has developed a relationship with maybe a mid-sized firm or a smaller firm that has developed perhaps over 6 to 7 months, sometimes almost a year. So it kind of, to answer your question, it kind of depends on the size of the agency, the philosophy of the agency, where they are regionally in regards to the school and the player they're recruiting, and a number of other factors. So, again, not an easy cut-and-dried answer, but a little bit more of a, I guess, a nuanced one.
Again, you mentioned war chest for training, and that's something that we wanted to talk about today in regards to the sports performance training. We know that's a cottage industry. It's kind of blown up over the last 10, 11 years, and, you know, we've seen different trends, different things that's gone on there. You know, big firms, we've seen, like, athletes' performance change to Exos, and it was just in Arizona, and now they're all over. And then we've seen, you know, different Velocity, which is kind of a, you know, pops up, Parisi, you know, speed schools. It's kind of in different areas. You know, then you've got the other, the kind of the one-off mom and pops, you know, then you've got IMG. You know, what, in regards to training, and obviously this is something that you track, you also have a great thing for agents who are, you know, a subscriber to your service in regards to being able to get, you know, your training, you know, offer packet grid in regards to where you will help kind of negotiate or kind of figure out a package deal with some of these trainers. What have you seen in regards to the training aspect of things over, you know, the last decade, and how that's really kind of come up in this cottage industry of sports performance?
Well, I always say that this business turns over about every 3 to 4 years. You see new trends come in and old ways change or die or end, you know, again, about every 3 or 4 years. When ITL launched in 02, training really wasn't a factor at all. It was something that might be mentioned, and I remember, I guess it was in the late 90s, the linebacker Keith McCants came out of Alabama, and I think he did 6 reps or something during the pre-evaluation process. In the early 2000s is when you really started to see players, the top echelon players, going to the major training facilities and spending, you know, 6 to 8 weeks and starting to, or maybe not that much, maybe 2 weeks, maybe 4 weeks somewhere, and kind of tuning things up and getting a little bit better at what they're doing, getting a little stronger, a little faster. You know, in the 13 years since, boy, that end of the industry has certainly taken on a significant change and really kind of become a major force in the recruiting process, to where it's now a major part of it. It's a major recruiting chip in the process. And I think probably the toughest thing for a new agent to accept, there's so much sticker shock that comes with the cost of training, and not just the cost of training. I mean, if you're going to send a player to the Miami area, for instance, a place where the real estate market is quite hot in January and February, the cost of just putting a player in a hotel or an apartment or other residence might rival the cost of the training itself. And so there's so many factors to be considered and weighed in this. You know, one of the things, you know, I have an 8-week newsletter series for new agents that I put out, and I try to hammer on the cost of training, the importance of training, the fact that even lower rated players see training as somewhat of an entitlement. And I think a lot of people will read through those newsletters and think, yeah, we'll get to this later. And then when December hits and they really start to see the impact of that and maybe see, you know, checks having to be written in the near future, there's a real kind of, you know, reaction to that I guess has, again, had a big impact on the game. And I think one thing that's really worth noting is the fact that I believe it was in March, players will vote to perhaps reduce the fees that agents can assess from 3% to 2%. And if that goes through and draft eligible players only pay 2% as a ceiling rather than something they can negotiate down to 2%, it could have a major impact on the training facilities, because, you know, when you're talking about $20,000 to $30,000 spent strictly on training, that's a major part of anyone's budget, and you're kind of chasing those fees and trying to recoup that investment for the life of that first contract. And again, I guess the average player is only on a team for only in the league for 3.5 years. That means you're hoping to get at least recoup your investment, even if your player is average and has an average length career. So it's a big deal. It's definitely a consideration for any agent who's in the game. And I would also say it's a major consideration for anyone who's considering being an agent, because it's really hard to escape that major investment. And I know you know about that as well, Justin.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, in the past 20 years, I mean, Mike Mola, you know, in the 1995 Combine, you know, he really trained for the Combine, and it really became, you know, big business. You know, there's hundreds of places that they say they do NFL Combine training. I mean, if you just Google that there, you know, and really those training facilities, they recruit just like agents. And, you know, and what you look at those things, and I guess, you know, as an agent and having to be certified and having to pay the insurance and pay the dues and take the test, you know, to be able to recruit, there's no regulations on these training facilities. And, you know, those guys go out and recruit just as hard, and they're the ones that, you know, you'll see kind of be able to have an impact, you know, on those players' decisions sometimes, you know. You know, and the question is do players have to go to a training facility to be successful, you know?
And the answer, answer to me is no, but so many players have come to expect it, and the thing that I always say is, you know, every player who's draft eligible for 2016 has seen for the last 3 years their buddies, their ex-teammates, putting on Instagram how they're partying in Miami during, you know, in January and February, or they're working out at some fancy workout facility, which could be anywhere, or they're getting some other special treatment that they see as a trapping of being an NFL player, or at least an NFL hopeful. And now it's their turn, and it's very hard for them to accept, hey, maybe the money's not there for that from the agents that are approaching him, or you know, maybe he doesn't rate highly enough to get that kind of training, and he has to swallow the bitter pill that he may have to train at school or train otherwise on his own at some local facility and sleep in his own bed and maybe even eat his own food rather than going and kind of having his every meal prepared specifically for him and be able to stay at a fancy resort-style training facility and, you know, and work out with some of the better players in the draft. And, you know, again, it is a harsh reality, but it is also the economics of the game. And sometimes the expectations and the money kind of crash and and hit hard, and things aren't always pretty. I didn't mean to cut you off, Justin, but, you know, I think that's the question that every agent has to ask. How much can I afford to invest in this player with there being no guarantees that he'll make the NFL and help me recoup my investment?
For sure. And if you look at this past year's draft, I mean, two of the top five players, Amari Cooper from Alabama, he was drafted fourth overall by the Raiders, and Brandon Scharf from Iowa was drafted fifth by the Redskins, both trained at school. And then we also had another first-round pick, Bud Dupree from Kentucky, was the 22nd overall pick by the Pittsburgh Steelers, trained at school. So even, I think, 17 players total that were drafted in the 2015 NFL draft trained at school. Now, obviously, there's different factors that, you know, kind of come in there. You always see Iowa guys and Wisconsin guys, you know, they like to, you know, they'll be more likely as far as that, you know, train at school there just because they believe in their strength and conditioning, you know, program there. You know, different factors of, hey, we're guys at far as school wise and different things like that. Now, yeah, if you're a top 100 or top 150 type guy, you know, you can pretty much dictate where you want to go to train and how, you know, how you want to be able to do that. And that's understandable based on, like you said, hey, the recruit, you know, of the expense of in regards to, hey, if you're going to put $20,000, you know, in with the signing bonus in that first year as an agent, you can expect to basically recoup your, you know, recoup your expense that you put in that as far as that investment. But when you start talking about player 350, you know, and down, well, then to put a $10,000 to, you know, dollar investment into that guy, that's you know, the big risk there. And I think you see those agents that will go ahead and put that $10,000 into a 350, to 500, you know, type rated player, those are the guys who, you know, are in the business for, you know, a couple of years and then they just run out of money, or their financial backer says, hey, what's going on? We've invested, you know, $80,000 and we've got $8,000 in return. You know, this isn't what we signed up for and what we were sold there.
And one thing
I think when we look at training facilities, I think we look at factors of location, personal attention, you know, position-specific training, and really their medical and rehab, and really familiar, you know, surroundings. You know, one thing that, you know, I've talked to trainers is, like you say, everyone wants to go to Miami and the warm weather and different things like that. But, you know, we have the combines in Indianapolis, and if you're a Midwest kid, you know, and you've played at Michigan, Michigan State, Purdue, Notre Dame, whatever, you're never going to run a 40 or do any of your training in the nice 80-degree sunny weather, you know, because in March in, you know, in Indianapolis, or excuse me, February in Indianapolis is cold, and then say you're at Notre Dame or University of Indiana, Purdue, you're still in Indiana when you do your pro day in March, and it's cold, you know, so, and, you know, people talk about the, you know, physiological, you know, things of the body, and I think that's something that, you know, guys don't take, you know, sometimes into consideration in regards to, hey, where am I going to be running my 40 when it's all said and done? You know, what have you seen from, you know, the trainers that you work with in regards to, you know, those types of factors with the personal attention, the location, the position-specific, you know, training? How do they all kind of rate, and how do they sell, and how do the, you know, as far as you work with, you know, with them and to try to help them, you know, get things done there?
Well, you know, take location, and I think this is, we're at risk, I guess we're at risk of beating a dead horse, but that Florida has kind of become the destination place that all the top players want to go to, or at least somewhere in the Sun Belt, certainly somewhere perhaps in Texas, Dallas area, maybe in Arizona, maybe in Southern California. But primarily Florida is where most players want to go. And you've seen a lot of trainers migrate to Florida and have a Florida presence. I think about 7 or 8 years ago, there was one major firm that would always send all of their clients to a place in New Jersey. And this is a major firm that regularly represented first rounders. And then you saw a progression, I guess I should say a regression, of their class over about a 2-year period to where they weren't in the first round anymore because they were insisting on sending their people to this location in the Northeast. And in short order, they realized, we gotta change this immediately or we'll never sign another first rounder. And now they are kind of like most agencies where they'll pretty much send their elite players anywhere they want to go. You alluded to the fact earlier that the trainers recruit as aggressively as the agents do. That's really the case. Now, not all training facilities, some of them still kind of lean on their relationships with the agents themselves and let the agents do most of the heavy lifting when it comes to recruiting. But a lot of the training facilities have bypassed the agents entirely. They go out and recruit the top players themselves, try to impress upon them their record of success and their achievement, and really sell the player, knowing that if it's truly an elite player, the agent's going to send him wherever he wants to go because he really has no say and no leverage in it. So that's another one of the really big changes in the business. I know there have been some trainers who really are not trainers at all. They're really glorified salesmen that will pitch the players they've worked with in the past, and they'll pitch the website with all the splashy pictures of, you know, players in the NFL that are former or current clients. They'll talk about everyone they had in for the off season, and they get farther and farther away from what I call the floor, you know, the training floor. They're more in the office. They're more conducting a social media campaign. They're more, you know, sending out texts and making calls and things like that. That's been another one of the big metamorphoses of the game, in that the training facilities have become major sales, you know, arms and marketing arms. And what's more, Justin, I know you know this as well, to bring a first rounder in now, a lot of these training facilities are comping the training entirely. I've seen packages now where not only is the training comp, the residence for the player is comped, the agent is allowed to come in and stay at a local hotel for free. They're even providing free airline tickets to the agents when they want to come visit. So it's gotten crazy because the competition for those top players is so fierce. And all these training facilities know that if they want to have a presence in this athletic sphere, they've got to get the big names, they've got to have the big helmets, they've got to have the really impressive players on their resume so that they can go to next year's class and charge the lesser players, I guess, in an effort to kind of try to cover their margins.
Yeah, I mean, that's you know, kind of the interesting thing is they work all this time for basically an 8-week period to then be able to you know, train the next class and as well, or well, the high school kids or the, you know, other guys that they're doing the other part, you know, the other part of the time. So where do you see the aspect of the training, you know, going in the future, like you mentioned in regards to how things, you know, change over. We saw in regards to, you know, the coming of the training facilities, and where do you project or think the next evolution will kind of come here in this area of the business?
Well, you know, we already talked about one, and you kind of alluded to that. I mean, if the fees are dropped to 2%, then I could see a major. You could see everyone who's outside the top 100 no longer getting training because there's certainly no guarantee that you'd be able to recoup your investment. I guess for as long as there are new agents coming into the game with deep pockets, there will still be some players who probably don't rate the training that will get the training. But, you know, $10,000 is about the floor for training a kid who has a legitimate chance of at least getting drafted or getting into a camp. So you're talking about 200 to 400, perhaps. Those guys are going to, you know, you're looking at spending $10,000. That may go away. Those players from 200 to 400 may go, you know, may not get the training anymore. I guess that would be one of the major trends that's kind of on the horizon. The other big one that I'm seeing is you're seeing a lot more a la carte offerings. Rather than getting a kind of a turnkey, here's what's going to cost for 8 weeks of training, residence included, training included, food included, all those things. What you're starting to see from trainers is, hey, look, you want the training, here's the cost of the training. You can find your own residence. You know, if your kid is willing to sleep in his own bed or stay, you know, in someone's garage apartment or otherwise find some accommodations, that's great. All we're going to worry about is the training. And I think trainers would love to go to that model entirely, but there still is a demand, especially from the bigger agencies, to give them a kind of comprehensive turnkey solution for training. And so, and when you do that, it makes it a much bigger headache for trainers because, you know, again, especially those that are in the Sun Belt in warm places where people are going in the winter, real estate's not easily achievable, especially when you're looking at a short-term lease, you know, 8 weeks or something like that. So I guess those are the two biggies. You know, number one is that you may see players outside of the top 100, 150, not get training anymore. And the other being that trainers are wanting to simplify their packages and just offer the training and put more of the heat, more of the pressure on the agent to find the accommodations, to find a place to put their player and perhaps even feed them. So we'll see how that develops.
Yeah, I mean, training's always been a, you know, important role, and I, you know, it's just something that, you know, I think is important to be able to kind of tune up, you know, guys and get them, you know, ready to do these different combine specific tests and what they have to do, you know, at the pro days and be able to do it. But as you know and I know, you know, the majority of the grades based on, you know, the film and the training aspect. That can it get guys to rise up the draft board? Yes. You know, but hey, I don't, you know, if you run 4.3 and you have horrible tape and you might get a shot, but it's, you know, it's not getting you drafted, you know, there. It's going to be based, hey, are you a football player, you know, and can you play football? We've seen guys make more moves in all-star games rising up draft boards than really, you know, the very few that, hey, they just go out and somebody thought they were going to run a 4.6 and they ran 4.4, yeah, you know, there. When it's all, you know, said and done. Is it important? Mm-hmm. Yes. Is it part of the process? Yes. Is it the end-all, be-all? No. And do I think we'll see, you know, a change, especially, you know, like you said, if there's a standpoint of the agent fees, you know, dropping, and, hey, will there be more pressure to, hey, you know, train at school, and will we see maybe age or trainers maybe get a little bit more into the agent role where they're taking their fees on a back end or on a becoming partners with the agent, you know, on this process? I think there are some creative things that can be done there, and I think we will see, you know, kind of more of that. But you know, definitely something, you know, that there's a ton of those trainers out there, and I think sometimes agents don't know who's reputable, who's not, and you know, and especially the newer agents. So I think what you do, you know, as a service and being able to help, you know, put that training packet together and kind of, you know, vet some of these, you know, these different trainers that are out there and try to help, you know, bring them to the marketplace is something that's a great service that's out there. So, yeah, I mean, you know, definitely we'll see what things transpire down the road here. Got about a couple minutes, four minutes left here of the show, Neil. You know, I know you're working with the College Gridiron Showcase. We talked a little bit about that last week. We've seen more of the Senior Bowl invites come out this morning. I saw a number of tweets in regards to the East-West Shrine Game in regards to acceptance. You know, we saw the NFLPA put out there. Where do you think we're at in regards to the All-Star games, in regards to how full each of those games are at right now?
Well, we're reaching 60% capacity for the two biggest games, the Senior Bowl and the Shrine Game. And I think we're approaching 50% on the NFLPA. I will say that I've never seen the level of disclosures by these games that we're seeing this year. I don't know what to attribute that to, but it's a big win for the agents and the players and even the scouts that we're having a better idea of, you know, who we'll see in January. The difficulty is that as we enter bowl play, a lot of things will change. Number one, injuries, of course. Number two, a lot of these players are accepting invitations free of the counsel of their agents. They don't really know any better, so they just take the invite. And I don't blame them. I strongly recommend they do that. However, as their careers end and they sign with agents, some of these agents will feel like, well, hey, you don't need to play in that game. You've got an injury. You've got a prior injury. Maybe you're feeling good now, but we want to maximize your health for the pre-draft run. We want to get you into a different game. We want to do this. We want to do that. So you start to see some players drop out of games. You start to see them move up to different games. You start to see kind of the dominoes fall. So we'll reach mid-December, and I think we'll probably have 70 to 80% capacities taken up for most of these games. But then the 2 weeks prior to a game actual playing, the actual, you know, taking place of the game, are always fast and furious, and there's always a tremendous amount of change there as well. So we'll have a bit of a break, I think, during the bowl season, but then as we get into January, it'll get really crazy again. So we got another week of kind of seeing, I think, these players showing up on Twitter and the invitations being published, and there'll be a bit of a lull, and then it'll get wild again somewhere around the second week of January, perhaps.
Where are you at with the College Gridiron Showcase? Where do you see that? How many percentage-wise?
We have the game has 35 commits right now. And today is a deadline for accepting or not accepting an invitation. And so there'll probably be a big wave of invites that will come out over the next week as they fill in for the people that they've been kind of waiting on. So I could see them being at 50% this time next week, maybe a little bit less, but probably right around there. I think they're progressing rather quickly and maybe surprising themselves. But again, there's always that domino process as a Senior Bowl. You know, the ripples that are created by the Senior Bowl are often felt in the College Gridiron Showcase because as they pilfer from the lower games. So there'll be a lot of movement over the next, you know, few weeks.
For sure. And they've got, you know, basically a month before, you know, guys show up for the College Gridiron Showcase. So, Neil, right. Another, you know, great show in regards to a lot of insight, a lot of talk about, you know, different things. And we look forward to, you know, your work on it, you know, inside the league this week, and as we kind of get up here to more signings and more breaking news. So, Neil, have a great week, and we'll look forward to next week's show as we tackle another topic about inside the football.
Thanks, Justin. Merry Christmas, everyone. See you next week.